Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk about an impromptu trip to Malta or a whole lot of lounge hopping. I'm not entirely sure, Tom. What should we be calling this episode?
I think if you're going to talk about like what was the driving factor, I think the lounge hopping. let's call a spade. You know, let's not beat around the bush. Come on. Yeah. You know, I think the lounges had something to do with this trip. Just a little bit.
I mean, by the numbers, we had was it 9 or 12 hours in the Lufthansa first class terminal and first class lounge. We had 4 or so hours at the Polaris lounge in Chicago. And then I think we had, a good 8 hours at the lounges, at a variety of lounges at London Heathrow, right? Mention a 5-hour layover in JFK and your favorite lounge on the planet.
Oh, is that my favorite? The Champagne Dungeon?
you seem to feel strongly about it, one way or the other.
I just have a nickname for it now, having been there several times, so...
So why don't we jump into it? I think we've talked about the sort of reasoning for the trip, for lack of a better way of saying it, was the lounges. I mean, we talked about in a prior episode sort of what goes into a guy's trip and why it feels so different compared to a trip with a family, right?
Right.
And so I think we don't need to like kind of rehash that part. But why don't we dive into what we actually ended up flying? And sort of how we made it all work.
Well, I mean, we talked a bit about kind of our process for booking, right? The last time, so this is our trip report now, right? About like what we actually did, and we started off with, what was it? It was a positioning flight to Chicago, then Lufthansa first class to Frankfurt, and then to Malta, and then we had a British Airways flight from Malta to Gatwick. And then we had American Airlines the rest of the way back. Does that sound right?
From London via JFK, yeah. So that's sort of the 40,000 foot view. We had, I think we already talked about all the lounges, and I think I actually forgot two, because there was Capital One Landing, where we were there literally a week after we had been there, a week after we had gone to MSP.
That's right.
And then there was also a lounge that wasn't actually it was not so bad in Malta too.
Yeah, I thought the lounge in Malta was reasonably nice, especially for an airport kind of like common lounge that's being shared by all the carriers.
Yeah, so why don't we dive in? I think we've covered Capital One Landing probably ad nauseum. Folks are probably tired of hearing about the wonderful tapas and some of those wonderful drinks they have there. Why don't we talk about the Polaris Lounge? I don't know if we've covered much of the Chicago Polaris Lounge. And this, I think, was your first time, right?
To the Chicago one, yeah. I don't think I'd been to the Chicago Polaris Lounge before. We flew in on American, right? So we had a little bit of a walk, right? So we had to kind of traverse quite a bit of O'Hare's terminals.
Yeah, we even got to go by where... Well, I'm trying to think. Was Bucco O'Hare's, I don't know if that was an F-4 Phantom or whatever that aircraft that used to be there. I don't think it was there on our walk going from the American to the Chicago.
I think you were looking
United.
For it, and then I thought you found it. I think you saw it like later.
But they moved it because they've got like a little kids area or something where it used to be.
Mm-hmm. But you know, we did kind of go from the kind of the American area, the HK kind of area to I forget where the United terminal is.
BC,
and we went under the runways, right, in the kind of the Gershwin music neon tunnel thing. What that's actually called something, isn't it?
I just consider Rhapsody it the Rhapsody in Blue, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's always a fun time. I mean, it's not so much fun to have to, like, do a long walk like that. I mean, I don't mind the walk, but, when you're trying to get to a flight or something.
It's better than PenFed's got great rates for everyone.
This is true. This is very true. And
so for anybody who's done the walk from United knows what that's all about.
Yeah, going to the Charlie Gates and taking the air train in Dulles, my gosh.
Yeah, Dulles doesn't have lovely Gershwin. They've got great rates for everyone.
Well, so I have to ask, Do you have PenFed?
I have a PenFed card. Yes, actually, I do.
Wow. I have some sort of zombie PenFed because I needed to have a PenFed account in order to get my mortgage, but I never ended up figuring out how to like validate it. So I haven't actually been able to get anything with PenFed. And every time I go down that little area hearing PenFed is for everyone, I think to myself, I really need to like resolve my account and then promptly forget.
Well, we did make our way, going back to our trip report, we did make our way finally to the Polaris Lounge in O'Hare. And it is a very nice space. You know, I don't seem to think if it's particularly better than, let's say, Dulles or Newark. But it's nice. It's fairly large. And I think you'd been before, but was it not true that maybe this was your first time since it's been renovated and expanded?
Yeah, this was my first time since they expanded it. And I definitely like what they did with the space. I feel like it definitely felt much, you know, roomier. And I can't even remember what the dining area was before, but I felt like the dining area was pretty good. Although a little deceiving because they had all those mirrors, so it made it feel like it was so much bigger than it was.
Yeah, it didn't seem particularly large. You know what it reminded me a lot of was kind of the wing dining area at Hong Kong Airport, at the cafe, you know, first class, the wing lounge, because it like the dimensions seemed strangely similar. And also almost kind of like the vibe or the feel of the room seems very similar.
Which is ironic because they're not even affiliated, you know, United and Cathay Pacific.
Nothing to do with each other.
I suspect it, a little bit of that is contributing because just how terminals are built, right?
Yeah.
And so you want to create a quiet space for dining, you know, for an a la carte type sit-down dining. And you probably only have so many different options.
And it ends up being a windowless room, you know, with lots of dining tables and things like that. So, of course, we made our way there first, you know, because I mean, I think one of the advantages of Polaris Lounge is the a la carte dining, right? That's one of the distinguishing features.
Absolutely, especially when you're going on an eastbound transatlantic, you know, you're going to have a short flight, right? And so, yeah, it's nice to be able to eat on board, especially because we were flying Lufthansa first class. Which they do a pretty decent job, a better than decent job, I'll say. But you still don't want to get into a situation where you're getting on board and you're just, so hungry. And so being able to have that nice, relaxed meal, you get a little bit better quality sometimes in the Polaris Lounge than some of the things they can do on board. And Lufthansa, as much as I love Lufthansa, they really try to do kind of crazy things. I don't think we had anything truly crazy on the menu for this particular flight, but I mean, I've had like goose and other things that sometimes just don't knock it out of the park.
You're not reacting favorably to the gourmand efforts of Lufthansa first class catering, huh?
You know, you're trying to make me a foodie, and you're making progress, but I still have a rather bland palate, my friend.
Yeah, I would agree with you on one thing though. It is a lot easier for them to serve a delicious meal on the ground than it is at 30,000 feet. And so, you know, if you have a lounge that has a la carte dining, you know, why not avail yourself, right?
Exactly, and. You know, you're going to be sitting in the lounge anyway for a while. Why not do it over a nice meal?
Yep. Well, and the fun thing is, you know, of course, we're seated, and we had a wonderful waitress, right? I think she did a pretty good job, if I remember correctly. Very friendly, very personable. But even more interesting, you know, we're sitting down. We've ordered our meal. We're just chit-chatting. And, you know, we're just kind of, I'm glancing over toward the entrance, and I start seeing this lady that kind of walks over, and I'm like, they seem very familiar. You know, is this somebody that I know?
Yeah, and it turns out, and we won't say her name. Well, actually, we can say Robin. There's a lot of Robins in the world. And we see Robin, and she's just getting off a flight, I think, from London. And we're like, hey, this is just serendipity. It was nice. We ended up having the chance to catch up, chat, and
seated
and I think,
right next to us, right, with like absolutely no, like just completely organically seated right next to us, essentially.
Yeah, and that was the best part, right? I mean, the irony of things, just just a nice opportunity to catch up. And I think that really enhanced the overall meal and the overall experience until she started to have to run, because I think I think the conversation went so long that she overstayed the amount of time.
Overstayed her intended amount. You know, I think we both had different plans, or both parties had different plans for what they were doing in the Polaris Lounge. And of course, you know, just running into another Miles and Points person in the wild is wild, right? It's fun. And, you know, we were just having such a great time chit-chatting and sharing stories and doing other things. You know, I think the time just flew by.
It really did. I even lost track. I mean, I thought we would be sitting out, you know, by the bar for a little bit, be able to try some of the different craft cocktails.
We had the time. We under normal circumstances, that would be the plan.
And it ended up, I mean, I think we left the restaurant shortly after Robin left, and we barely had enough time to use the restroom. And where did the time go? And that's the beauty of running into, you know, fellow Miles and Points folks.
And it happens so often. It's just crazy. You know, I think as your network grows and you know more people, you know, you just end up just running into people. And I guess we run in packs and we run in the same circles. And, you know, I guess if we are going to run into somebody, I guess the Polaris Lounge is probably the place to run into them.
Well, and that's the funniest part, because Robin is normally a one world person. So I never would have expected to see her in a Polaris Lounge, but it just happened to be. I mean, those are the fun pieces. So we had that time in the Polaris Lounge, and then we had that kind of fun or unfun walk back under the Rhapsody in Blue tunnel, mm-hmm. because Lufthansa goes out of the B terminal, if I recall, and they have a lounge over there.
Very close, in fact, to the gates.
Yeah, which is convenient, but it was really funny because we ended up, we got our like kind of pre-check or whatever the checking in thing that you've got to do at the gate.
They needed to do the passport check, right? They needed to look at the credentials.
Yeah. I always forget that they have to do that, and inevitably I'm always cutting it close. And so we do the passport check.
Oh, really? Do you cut those things close?
Oh, never. Never. I mean...
Do you want that last sip of champagne before boarding?
In all fairness, normally when it's like a Lufthansa First Class or something premium, I want to be the first on board.
Right.
But there are times when, like, if it's just business class, yeah, I cut it too close. And inevitably, they're, like, trying to do the passport check and you know, get us all through. And then, you know, the door closes. It's kind of funny sometimes.
I think some of the companions of Mr. Mountcastle are a little bit more nervous and anxious than he is when it comes to boarding time.
Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. But I found it interesting. So we walk into that lounge, and it's just a normal United Club.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're checking in, there's somebody in front of us, and the agent there is like, oh, you know, you can go to the Polaris Lounge. It's just over in the C terminal. And you and I think, you know, have that, like, silent look of he does realize he only has about, like, 10 minutes maximum, and it's about that long of a walk.
Right.
and we're like I know in my mind, I'm like, do I tell him or do I just sort of see if he makes the right call? And I think he did make the right call. He ended up joining the lounge with us. And I mean, it's not an amazing lounge, but it's a little bit of a breath of fresh air from the scrum, because Lufthansa goes at the end of the B gates. And so you've got like, what, four or five gates all in this like little, it's not even
kind
a lollipop.
End cap of the terminal. And, you know, it's like, I think we had the Munich flight, I think, leaving around the same time,
yep.
So or right before. So the whole area was quite congested. I think, you know, whatever wide body they had to Munich plus the 747-8 that was going to Frankfurt, that gate area was not sufficient for that number of people.
Exactly. The nice thing, though, was we left the lounge and they still hadn't boarded. But we were okay with that, given recent experiences. and so we had that same gentleman that checked our passports, and he escorted us into an exclusive, I use air quotes here, an exclusive area in the gate area where the first class passengers could wait. And it almost felt like we had a little bit of networking time, because we're sitting there and we're all kind of pushed together, and we just ended up chatting with I think there was a couple that was on the plane with us going to Rome. And so, you know, we're just having a little bit of a chat. And before long, we were able to get on board, and I suppose that's where the real experience started.
Yeah, and it was a completely full first class cabin, right? So no solo trip this time. Every single seat was filled, but pretty typical, I think, Lufthansa first class. I mean, I couldn't think of anything that was over the top compared to previous experiences, but you know, very, very good. One thing I did kind of realize, you know, this having been, I guess, the first time, well, I mean, we flew this last year, or at least I did, and I know you did as well.
Yeah, together.
And you probably, I think you flew another, I don't know if you flew another flight in between then, but one of the things I did notice is that the in-flight entertainment is starting to show its age. You know, I think both the selection and kind of the system itself was feeling a little dated and tired. So I kind of am wondering, you know, I'm guessing with, you know, as they refresh the cabins with Allegris and some of these other products, you know, hopefully they're going in and changing the in-flight entertainment system, because it was feeling pretty pitiful. I don't even think I watched a movie on this flight, if I remember correctly.
I mean, some of the technology is just bad too. Like, you know, how many people want to do that kind of rough touch screen in the span of like a half inch square? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can only do so much with that. And believe me, I've been a huge fan of this seat. I think the seat is so incredibly comfortable, and even that's looking tired. And that says something when these are 747-8Is, which are not very old. I mean, it's been...
Well, compared to an A340, yes.
Right,
Their brand's making new compared to that. But
Or even an A380.
But, you know, you have to think, you know, these jets were probably delivered, what, 10 years plus ago.
Yeah,
right?
It's got to be 10.
12 years, 13, 14 years ago. So they're not spring chickens. And, you know, the other thing that's happened is in the period of time since these seats came out, I mean, this fact that the screen is
tiny,
tiny, you know, compared to what, you know, you're probably finding on brand new, you know, Japanese carriers or whoever, you know, the most of the more modern equipment, you know, they have a far larger screen, and you know, you're pretty far away from the screen when you're sitting back in the Lufthansa first class seat.
You are, yeah. No, the IFE definitely has some room to grow. I think the rest of the cabin though has some great features. I mean, I like the lockers. We don't really give the lockers a lot of credit, but I think that makes a difference, because it just makes the cabin feel very open. And yet they have those little kind of curved things that come up when they make the bed that makes it feel somewhat private. So I think it's a nice balance. So shifting gears on board, I find that their champagne selection seems to vary. And this is one of those times where I was kind of both happy and not at the same time. There's a little bit of a story behind a champagne called Pommery Louise. The reason is British Airways used to serve Laurent Perrier Grand Cicle, and I'm probably not pronouncing it right. If you were coming on here, or if you were listening here for me to pronounce French champagne names, you've probably groaned a bit. But that used to be the standard that British Airways First Class and Concorde Room served, and I found it interesting when they changed that. And I think it was LPGS's decision, not British Airways. Their first choice was, or their first transition was to Pommery Louise. And so a champagne that I had never even heard of is now something that I'm like, oh, I'm curious how it tastes. And so they happen to have that on board. And I probably bored the flight attendant with a little bit of that story, which I need to remember not to do in the future. But finally, to be able to taste it was great. I don't think I need another taste of that again, but the overall food and bev experience on Lufthansa is great. I love how they rotate out different champagnes. Of course, they do the caviar. I think I had a steak on board, which I don't often.
I think I had the steak as well, and if I remember correctly, both of us thought it was a little bit overdone, right?
Like, yep.
But you know, still tasted good. It was still tender, and you know, I enjoyed it. It's solid food and beverage. You know, love the caviar service. I obviously can't skip out on that.
No, and I love how they do that. They've got the vodka, and they gave me a very healthy helping, and I am not one to turn that down. Oh, I left nothing.
So one of the highlights of a meal on Lufthansa is the caviar service.
Absolutely, absolutely. So much so that I can't remember what the dessert was and whether or not I had it.
You know, I was just looking at the photos that I usually take, and for whatever reason, I didn't take the photo of the dessert, and not super memorable. So, I guess it'll be lost to annals of time, or sands of time. Although I could look at the actual printed menu. You know, I do usually take those, and I have them. A collection of those sitting on my bookshelf. Those of you, you know, behind me, where I've got, you know, several folders full of menus actually from over the years.
That's almost a fire hazard, man. You've got so many menus.
What a fire hazard? Come on, what compared to like some books or something? I don't know.
I was just trying to give our listeners an idea of truly how many of those menus you have. I mean, you'll just sort of reach back and pull out a menu from like 10 years ago.
I will. That's why they're there, you know, so I can reminisce. And, you know, I consider one of those, you know, the menus, you know, one of the best souvenirs of the flight because it's very, very specific to, you know, what I did. And I consider some of the food experiences on these flights, you know, part of the magic, you know, part of the reason why you go through all these gyrations to actually fly these things, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we've covered enough of the Lufthansa flight. I honestly can't remember whether or not we even woke up for breakfast because we knew we had so much time in the lounge. But we did something different than we normally do.
We did.
Yeah.
Well, we knew we had a long layover, right? So, you know, we made the conscious decision, let's go to the lounge as well as the first class terminal in Frankfurt.
Yeah, and I'm glad we did that. I've only been to that lounge once before,
mm-hmm.
and it was part of an Europe. I was with my father, and we enjoyed it, but it was one of those things where we were sort of like, okay, we're more focused on what are our options and that sort of thing, and not necessarily, you know, taking in the benefits of the lounge. And so we spent, what, a good 2-3 hours there. I think you even got yourself an hour's nap.
I was going to say, I definitely made use of one of the amenities there. Is, you know, I went ahead and utilized the nap room. And they do have two of these nap rooms in the first class lounge and as well in the first class terminal. And they are first come, first serve. So it's often frequent that there'll be somebody occupying them. Unfortunately, there was one room available. So I took shift one. And took the nap in the first class lounge, and it was nice. It was nice to have a nice, you know, 2 hour sleep. You know, after that kind of long, you know, what, 7 hour transatlantic flight, you know, from Chicago, which I honestly didn't sleep very much on. You know, I was maybe an hour or two nap on the plane. I was still quite tired, so I did need a little bit more sleep, and it was it really was helpful to have another 2 hours or so of napping in that nap room.
Yeah, and I found it just to be really relaxing, just being able to watch the planes, because that lounge actually does have a wonderful window view. And so I had set myself up. I did a little bit of work on one of the episodes, doing some editing, and just took in the experience. Probably tried all of their champagne options, despite it being early, I mean, because it is airside. And I did get a good night's sleep for about 4 or 5 hours on that flight. So I was feeling fine. I was glad to be able to sample some of the food and everything. I didn't end up sitting in the restaurant. I think that's one thing in hindsight, we probably should have given it a shot.
I think in hindsight, you know, it might've been nice for us to try one meal in the lounge and then one meal in the terminal. But we ended up just having two meals in the terminal.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. And I'll just say, we won't revisit the whole sleep room when we talk about the terminal, but I will say I was very impressed with how comfortable that bed was and the room in general. The other thing that I found interesting, and I can't remember whether we noticed it last time, although I think you had identified that the contract had changed before our last trip, is that it's no longer, is it Doe & Co. or Do & Co.?
I think it's Doe & Co. I'm sure it's, you know, tomato, tomato, but... Yeah, the caterers had changed, right? They're and in fact, we, I think, looked up on the internet and saw there was an article where they did comment how the Frankfurt first class lounges were changing vendors, right? It actually there was actually a press release about it.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a shame. I mean, I don't think I saw the familiar faces that we'd come to know, like Christoph in the first class terminal. Maybe it was his day off. Maybe he did transition to the new contract. I don't know, but... We didn't see him. The food I felt was a little bit different. The schnitzel is always amazing. I mean, they seem to have retained that recipe. But when you look at the wines, it felt like the wines were just a little bit different. They were pushing one particular champagne, both a rosé and a blanc, that I had never heard of. And they even had the, I don't know if it's monogrammed or the branded glassware. It definitely, I felt like I could definitely see differences in the overall experience. And I mean, you know how I am with change.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely different. I ended up having two different dishes. I think I got one of them was like the special menu, like the seasonal menu or something. They had an item. But at the same time, you know, there were a couple items that were kind of the same. You know, I think we ended up ordering one of the desserts, right? And that ended up pretty much identical to what I think we had ordered a year ago when we were there with JT and Katie. Right, and had lunch with them.
Yeah, it's like a mascarpone type duck or something like that.
Right.
That was fantastic. I mean, don't get me wrong. I had the schnitzel twice, and I probably could have ordered another serving. It's that good, and it's my comfort food, and that's the place that I just have such a positive memory of enjoying it, and that didn't change. The you know, even the accompaniments were perfect. I think it was just, you know, interesting to see the little, you know, small changes in how they the new company is operating that terminal and that lounge.
I will say one advantage of both visiting the lounge and the terminal is more ducks. So we got I'm now up to three white Lufthansa terminal ducks, which I think Trevor can actually kind of see because he's got can see my webcam here. But the downside was it was just two of the same, more of those like white ducks, which are kind of boring. Ooh. I wish there were a little bit more special ones. I know sometimes they do seasonal ones or they'll do some fun ones. You know, I know during the World Cup or something, I think they had like a soccer fans a duck or something. And of course you've mentioned in the past, you know, if you happen to be there on your birthday, you know, they've got some birthday ducks and things like that. But, I will say these plain white ones are, I have a lot of them now.
I totally hear that. It's like the black and the silver ones from before.
Yes.
So I think we covered a lot of that. We did get a drive, thankfully. Yeah, what was that again? It was a Genesis?
No, I think it was a BMW.
You know, I feel like I should have looked at that photo.
Did we take a photo? I guess you took a photo, right?
Yes.
So was our trip to the lounge in Frankfurt too long? You know, because you know, I think we were second guessing ourselves after we booked it, right? You know, it was a 13-hour layover.
So, I don't think it was too long. I was getting a little tired of it after a while, but it was nice to end it, to cap it off with the dinner. I think the problem I ran into was that we arrived so late into Malta that it made it just not a wonderful experience to kind of arrive into a brand new location, a brand new destination.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if we had tried to time it a little bit better where, you know, maybe we'd be able to get dinner in Malta or at least, you know, visit the lounge. A little spoiler alert, the lounge was not amazing. I felt like if we could get a little bit of time on the ground that day, it wouldn't have felt like such a wasted sort of hotel night. But,
and to clarify, you're talking about the lounge at the Hyatt Regency in Malta.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. The Lufthansa lounge is far superior. The problem, and in all fairness, if it was a 2-hour flight from Lufthansa or from Frankfurt, I probably would have been a whole lot more okay with being, you know, getting in so late. I think it was just a long flight. It was like, what, 4 hours?
Oh, was it that long? I can't even remember.
It was 3 to 4 hours, I felt.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But I will say, you know, I did remember thinking there were some stretches of kind of downtime where I was like, not a lot to do right this second. But, you know, nap room, you know, shopping in the duty-free store, multiple meals in the restaurant, you know, I took a shower. I think all of that combined, you know, I don't think that long layover was, you know, painful in any way. I think it was still very comfortable.
Oh, absolutely.
And a memorable visit to the lounge, and I definitely feel like I've got enough of the first class terminal. I don't need to go on Lufthansa First next month or anything. You know, I've been satiated. I have my taste of LH First and the lounges for at least a little while.
Yeah, I agree. And what I think really made the difference for me was the fact that we went to the lounge and then broke that up with going to the terminal. I mean, the terminal is wonderful. The terminal is truly wonderful, but you can see when those banks of flights come in and out, and you feel that, right? You feel how busy it gets. They still manage it really well, but you can hear the click, the clitter clatter of the Lufthansa handlers going back and forth in a frenzied manner during those banks. And I felt like we avoided one of those banks in the regular lounge because they just, not a lot of people seem to go there as much. It just felt like that lounge was so much quieter.
And I feel like the general sense that I get is the morning is the rush hour, you know, in that lounge.
So the at the terminal.
So that, you know, the fact that we spent some of our morning in the lounge rather than the terminal, you know, we were able to avoid some of that rush hour because it definitely feels like the peakiness of having the passengers run through the terminal. It definitely feels like the AM is quite a lot busier than the PM.
I definitely got that feeling too. And maybe it's because we didn't leave late enough for, you know what? I take that back. I don't know when the Asia Bank flights go. And I don't know if they're doing as much on the Asia Bank flights as they used to because of the whole Russian overflight.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them having cut back some destinations, I'm sure. But yeah, I'd say if you want to, you know, enjoy the time, you know, it's that time and you know, past noon where you're going to start seeing the place thin out a little bit and you'll have kind of more space to yourself in that lounge, just as a kind of a tip for, you know, those of you who plan to make a pilgrimage out to the first class terminal in the future.
Besides, the lunch and dinner, I feel, are so much better there than the breakfast.
Yeah.
Just absolutely so much better.
Fair assessment. We did take one more flight, right? We did take a narrow body flight down to Malta, right? And they did serve a meal, and I thought it was pretty reasonable, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about European carriers, right? If you're flying in the pointy end of the plane, it could be a 30-minute or maybe not a 30-minute, it could be an hour flight, and they're going to figure out a way to put something on your tray table that's at least edible and maybe accompanied with a nice beverage.
Right.
And I think that's just a wonderful thing about how they do it. I know that everybody likes to comment about, oh, well, it's the same kind of economy seat. You just have nobody in the middle. But the reality is you get a little bit more than just an economy seat. You get that meal, and sometimes that meal makes a difference. It just, for us in this case, it was a, you know, three or 4 hour flight, and we were literally going, you know, face in pillow by the time we got to the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And so having that little bit meant that going to breakfast, you're not ravenous.
Interestingly, though, we went to pillows in two different buildings.
Yeah, and I think that was actually better. And I wish we could say it was for the pod.
Unintentional. But we talked about it the last episode a little bit.
We did. And I think that it's so interesting that they have two hotels literally right across the street from each other. I mean, I couldn't see your hotel, because of the way this the Hyatt Regency was, but literally across the street.
Oh yeah, well, in fact, you know, I think when I went into, I didn't know where the Centric was, so I think we walked into the lobby of the Hyatt, and they were like, and we asked I asked the front desk person, hey, how do I get to the Centric? And they were like, here, follow me, and they literally showed me to the back door, and it was literally across the street from the back door that adjoined the front desk, and so. You know, I do agree that it is interesting to have these two Hyatts next to each other. You know what I think is more interesting is the cheaper brand, both from points and kind of reputation, I think is the better property.
I would agree. I mean, I didn't get to see your room, but we saw the lounge, and not all Hyatt Centrics have lounges.
Right.
So that right there just makes it better. I really liked the space they had for the breakfast.
It was a rooftop space.
Yeah. I didn't stay with you for the breakfast because I didn't want because they seemed like they were kind of a little ornery about the whole breakfast and charging me, and I just found like the space was really really good. I would definitely, if I were to go back to Malta, I would be at the Centric. I would not be at the Regency.
I would agree.
I think we talked a little bit on the other episode, but we'll talk about it here. The Regency is just kind of a weird hotel. I mean, it seems like it's a little bit older than the Centric, and
still very new. I mean, it's even though it is older, it's maybe older by like 1 or 2 years, not by a decade or 2 decades.
And they've got a big conference space. I think that's what their big deal is the conference space. They focus on that, and it was almost as if the lounge was an afterthought.
Jinx.
Yeah. the lounge was an afterthought. You have to walk through the conference space, which is awkward when there's a conference there, right? Because you're walking through and these people are having their little afternoon hors d'oeuvres or their conversations. And then you walk into this tiny little space. Now, from conversations that we had overheard, it sounded to me like sometimes they'll open up one of the walls of the lounge into the conference room space to be able to make it a bigger lounge. But this felt, this was a very small,
very disappointing Regency lounge. I mean, I'm glad they have one. It was kind of nice to have a little bite to eat, but it definitely didn't make a meal for me. So when I visited it, and I also want to take this opportunity for another small, quick point about Malta. Malta is one of the most densely populated areas in Europe. I didn't know if people knew that or not. It's an island. It's off the coast of – it's basically right below Sicily, right? So they've got kind of an affinity for things Italian because, they're very close. It was a colony of Britain for a while. So, English is one of the official languages. So it's a very interesting place. But, I think if you recall, the hotels were incredibly compact from their use of land. And I feel like the space and the thing, that's one of, the interesting issues there is just everything's just built on top of each other and super, super tight from a space perspective.
I mean, it's an island. Yeah, definitely felt like that. It felt very vertical as well.
Yes.
Ironically, the traffic wasn't nearly as bad as I was expecting. I mean, it was bad, but it was not nearly as bad as what I would have expected for an island like that, as built as it is.
Correct. Yeah, I would agree with that comment. But, it was interesting. So, did you want to talk a little bit about what we did on the island?
Yeah, let's start. Is it Old Town Valletta or Valletta?
Those of our listeners who come to hear our pronunciations of European things, we're once again disappoint you because we don't know what the correct pronunciation is. I'm going to go say Valletta. So,
yeah, it was nice. It was this nice kind of old town, very pedestrian walking sort of area. Tons and tons of people. I couldn't get over how busy it was.
And this was like a weekday. No special occasion that I can think of.
Yeah, it's like a random Wednesday, I think, or Tuesday. Tuesday.
I will say there was a high preponderance of Brits, right? And I feel like the British contingent was there in full force.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely felt that way. Even when we were flying out, I mean, it was like 5 Ryanair flights and 3 British Airways flights. I was like, my gosh, how much lift do we have to the UK?
A lot. But, I think Old Town Valletta was an interesting place to visit. Lots of old stone, lots of interesting architecture. Some
beautiful
museums,
churches.
Interesting places. A great place. I would say, again, another hindsight thing. I think we decided to have lunch in St. Julian's. I think we would have been much better to probably stay in Valletta to stay for lunch, rather than going to St. Julian's, because I think our options there were a lot more limited than they were kind of in that old town area, although probably a lot of tourist traps, though.
Yeah, but I can deal with a tourist trap when you're sitting out eating al fresco and just being able to people watch. And we saw a bunch of those little places that seemed nice. They had a nice breeze. That is definitely, in hindsight, we should have probably done that. We did stop for a beverage, at least, in this nice little market. It was you'd never know it was as beautiful inside as it was. It was just sort of unassuming from the outside, and you get inside and they've got little food halls, a supermarket in the basement. And so I felt like we had a nice little respite from the sun and everything there.
Oh, yeah.
But the, The cool part I thought from Vallarta was when you made it to the coast, so you got out of the old town area, like the really busy area, and they had all these cannons and other sort of weaponry emplacements, and you could sort of see a little bit of that history as you sort of look onto the harbor.
I think it's impressive to see the walls of the city, right? And just how, armored and just how solid all the, walls and other, battlements and everything are, right? And how this place was very much, a contested piece of land with various different empires over history.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be taking a flotilla at this island, at least not the ports that we saw. And the other interesting thing I thought as we sort of walked around the perimeter of Vallarta is we got to see, what was it, I think either a MSC cruise ship that was in dry dock.
Oh, yeah.
Getting a retro or a refit, I suppose. So I didn't realize that they did have that capability, which makes total sense. I mean, you're literally in the middle of the Mediterranean. Great to have the ability to just do a refit or an amp up, if you want to call it the Royal Caribbean terminology.
I feel like they do not only dry dock, but I feel like they do retrofits for airlines too. Like I feel like there's some maintenance facilities in Malta as well.
Oh, we might have to do a little real-time producing.
Real-time producing? Okay, real-time producer, go. Go, Gadget.
What do they call them? RMOs?
FBOs. Well, I think for private jets, I thought they were FBOs, but they're also something else. Maybe for the service side, you're right. There might be another.
There's MROs.
MROs, that's right. And does Lufthansa Technique have something in Malta?
They do indeed. Wow. Okay, you knew the answer. You were just trying to lead us there.
Guilty as charged.
I don't know. I could see taking a cruise ship to Malta to try to do a dry dock. I don't know that I'm flying a plane all the way to Malta to do to Lufthansa Technique Malta for some maintenance. It just feels a little odd. Maybe like it just doesn't seem like that would be a core expertise for an island nation.
But I guess maybe it's a combination of it's an EU country. It's got a labor force. Maybe that labor force is cheaper, a little bit more economical than the German workforce. And yeah, you can fly airplanes there. So
yeah, that's interesting. They can do maintenance for pretty much most of the narrow body, it looks like it's the A320, A320neo, 330, 340, A350. I guess you're not getting an A380 into Malta's airport. I could see that.
That could be a little different, challenging. But in any case, great place to visit. I thought the old town area our weather was very nice. This was it late October, I think, and I thought the weather was very pleasant.
Yeah.
I would probably not want to be there during the summer maybe for the diving and snorkeling, which are things we did not get to do. But otherwise, I thought the strolling, visiting the city, the weather was perfect.
It really was. I mean, this is definitely the perfect location for the shoulder seasons. I have to imagine even just a few weeks earlier, we would have been sweltering, which is unfortunate. But I mean, just such a beautiful country. Yep. And as you said, we did hop an Uber back to St. Julian's. St. Julian's is where the Hyatt Regency and the Hyatt Centric are. Again, this is a very vertical area. We ended up finding, so they have a mall across the street from the Hyatt Regency, and they have escalators and an elevator. So we were able to get down to the beach by going via that rather than trying to, kind of go down these rather steep roads. And the beach was there. It's a cove, which was nice. They had some boats and stuff, but it was very uninspiring.
Oh, yeah. Well, an interesting thing was, it was actually quite busy, right? It's not a super large beach. Extremely well attended, though. Lots of people were lounging around.
And they had, an Intercontinental, and then, I don't know, they had some sort of beach club as well. All vying for this, just a couple hundred meter long beach, I think.
Right. And, it wasn't like white sand and blue water. It was kind of a little dingy, if you ask me. Definitely not to our standard. I guess a little spoiled, you know, from our multiple trips to the Caribbean and the Maldives and other places that have much nicer nicer beaches.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a European beach. So I've found the European beaches can be very variable. I mean, at least they had sand instead of rocks.
Instead of pebbles.
Yeah. So we'll give them that. You want to talk about the British Airways to Gatwick flight?
Sure. You know, that is what we did. And again, I think we mentioned during the booking episode, you know, I'm kind of glad we did fly in kind of Euro business, right, on British Airways. I thought actually the meal on that flight was incredibly good. And this was only a 2-3 hour flight from Malta to London Gatwick on a narrow body. I was shocked almost at the quality of the meal that we got.
I'm trying to think of what that meal was. It was
I think it was a beef dish, and I think it had some peppercorns in it. I know it's probably the spice was not to your liking because it was a little spicy.
I like peppercorns. At least parts of it were. I'm not that bland.
I thought it was well sauced, and I don't know. I thought it was a good meal. You know, I thought they had, you know, multiple rounds of drinks were provided when the flight attendant remembered my order.
Yeah, I think that was the one problem. She just wasn't paying attention very much.
No, I think she heard what I said, but I think it immediately escaped her because, you know, I think I had to ask her a second time or third time.
Well, and then one time she brought you the completely wrong thing.
Yes.
I mean, you either got forgotten or you got like a ginger ale or something.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
I did do one fun thing. I did buy some onboard in-flight purchases. So this was a relatively short flight, but they actually did have duty-free service where they had the cart with some stuff on it. So I bought a tote bag and an airplane model and charged it to my Ritz-Carlton card, which I went ahead and reimbursed as a in-flight purchase.
Yeah, other people are trying to game that and like get that cash. You're like, I need another plane for my for my bookshelf.
That's right.
Was it an A320?
I think it might have been a smaller version of a 380. I have it over on the shelf over there somewhere. I haven't actually even opened it out of the package. It's still it's still fresh, brand new in package.
There you go. There you go. But getting the best out of your Ritz-Carlton card.
Oh yeah, that's a keeper.
So this next piece, I was nervous about. I've only flown into Gatwick once before. And I just don't remember it being an amazing experience. I mean, it was an amazing experience because I caught up with family friends for pints. But I don't remember it being an amazing experience getting into the city and, you know, essentially getting away from Gatwick. And so when we landed, I was sort of looking around and you were fairly confident. You were like, yeah, there's a shuttle. We'll just take the shuttle to Heathrow and then that'll be that.
Yeah. I mean, I think they have bus service between the two airports. And you're right. I was a little skeptical too. It had been a good 20 years since I'd been to Gatwick as well, and things definitely have changed. I mean, the state of Gatwick is very different than it was. I think when I was there, probably mid 2000s was probably the last time I was there. I think as it turned out, I thought it was a very smooth experience. You know, I think our gate to our hotel at Heathrow. I mean, that was an amazing amount of time. It was very very quick. I thought.
I agree. Yeah, I think I was very surprised at how seamless it was. And then all we had to do was hustle a little bit to get the local bus to get to the Hyatt Place.
Yep. And there we were. So it was two bus rides. But I feel like from gate to hotel, could it have been maybe only an hour or so?
Maybe an hour and 20, because yeah. I just remember it felt like we were waiting at Heathrow for a while because I didn't break my sweater out. So I was a little bit chilly in the rainy London weather.
And I think you're right. I think I felt like we waited longer for the local bus than we did for the kind of trans London bus, you know, that takes us from Gatwick. It was, I think it was National Express or something. Their version, I guess, of Greyhound or something, which takes you between with scheduled service between the two airports.
Yeah, absolutely. We spent more time waiting at Heathrow for the local, and we did that Hyatt Place. I found that Hyatt Place to be reasonable.
I think so.
We'll share So I can't remember if we talked about this on the other episode, but I'll just share this here. So we tested out Rove, which is the Rove Miles, which is a shopping portal, but they recently rolled out this ability to book hotels. And so we ended up booking our hotels through that revenue. And unfortunately, I missed it in booking, and I think you missed it too, which I guess tells us that we need to be looking better at T's and C's like we used to. We might have gotten a little bit sloppy in the last few years. I know.
Well, I think we were booking that, you know, kind of on the. I think we booked that in Malta, probably.
We did. Yes.
In one of the lounges. So let's just say it was not. We weren't exactly doing it at our homes, you know, where we had complete ability to you know, focus on these things. I think we're kind of doing it
on the fly,
on the back of the napkin, so to speak, on the fly. Yeah.
And we come to learn that if you book the cheapest, you essentially are just, it's as if you're booking through Expedia, and so you don't get the elite status credit. I think they have a different one where you have to book and you pay a little bit more, and then you get the elite status credit.
Yeah.
And so that's just a word to the wise for those that like their globalist status. If you're going to do Rove, be mindful to book the particular rate that does get you that elite qualifying night and the status recognition. We were able to negotiate at check-in for the globalist recognition, but we never got the elite qualifying
State
nights.
Credit.
Yeah. So small little thing.
Yeah, but it was a nice place, and we actually had dinner there. And I thought the little bar dinner area, they did a surprisingly good job. I think you had some sort of a chicken dish, and I had fish and chips, and I thought both dishes came up pretty nice, you know, considering it's a Hyatt place next to the airport.
Yeah, I mean, it's London prices, but I found the quality to be wonderful.
It was
exactly what we needed, and when we needed it, and where we needed it. It was a little unfortunate. I think we chose the flights to make it most comfortable for us, so we could have a little bit of that time in Malta, and we ended up not really wanting that time in Malta. It was, what, a 11 a.m. flight or something like that got in like 3 mm-hmm. or 4. By the time we got to the hotel, it was, you know, we were pretty much just ready for dinner and then sleep because we wanted to be fresh for the next day. We didn't really give ourselves enough time to go into London proper. That would have taken away from the following day, which I think was the second priority of the trip, right? The first priority was Lufthansa. and then the second priority was really lounge hopping in Terminal 3.
I actually think that was my main priority, by the way. You know, I of course, I've actually done this before, you know, and this was Trevor's first time, but, you know, Terminal 3 at Heathrow, again, I think we probably mentioned in a previous episode, but just to refresh our listeners now, is an incredible collection of One World lounges in one place. And so, you know, you can really see quite a few lounges, and we probably even left some on the table. I mean, we budgeted what, a good 8 hours or so. And, we actually didn't complete the list, did we? There was some stuff that we left on the table.
We didn't have the meal at the British Airways because we did have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that Terminal 3 is a panoply, or panoply, or a magnificent or impressive array of lounge options.
Maybe a menagerie.
A menagerie could be too, and we learned a bunch of interesting things. I thought going from lounge to lounge, the one thing that I'm learning more and more and am reminded of is that the Centurion is not to be prioritized. I felt like we went farther out of our way to go to the Centurion Lounge, and I was just so unimpressed.
Yeah, it's sad, the state of affairs, in a way. I mean, I remember when they first introduced those lounges, how game-changing they were, right? And how they really did kind of set the bar at a new level. And I don't really think of them in the same way anymore, although it sounds like there's little bits and pieces of them trying to bring amenities back in. I was, you know, I think, you know, when we had our recent trip over to National, you know, they mentioned they were having ice cream at the Centurion at National Airport. And then I think I saw a post about them having like a special weeknight at the SFO Centurion Lounge where they had, you know, crab legs and prime rib or something, which was kind of interesting. So I get, it sounds like there's times where they're doing a little bit of surprise and delight at some of these American Express lounges. I'm glad they are, because, you know, they've kind of become, they went from being a benchmark to a commodity, is the best way I could put it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just, it's a shame. And so we went there, and I think we spent maybe 20 minutes there, and probably if only that. Spent 20 minutes there, or you know, we probably only spent as much time there because of the because there was a bathroom that we needed, you know.
That's about
like,
right.
Like that was essentially what that lounge
was. We used
was.
The facilities, and we maybe had a drink, and then we left.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was lounge number one.
It was, and then we navigated across that big seating area in T3, where they kind of, you know, push everybody because they want everybody to shop and everything. And then we made it to the good area. And I felt like I'm torn on whether or not we sequenced our lounges the right way. I think we really prioritized.
I thought we did a pretty good job of sequencing, because, you know, they almost went in kind of, you know, in range of goodness, you know, so we started with kind of the bottom. And, you know, it's almost like that's probably a good way to do your lounge hopping, right? You know, start with the one that is maybe not the best and then kind of work your way up.
I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, and so we buried the lead, but we started with the American Lounge.
Well, or that was the second lounge. That's the American Lounge.
After the Centurion.
Yes, after the Centurion, yes.
But, and the American Lounge I thought was nice. They had Moët Chandon Imperial and Imperial Rosé. Obviously, you know, very, 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 very strong beverages. I didn't really see a whole lot else. They did have a menu for sit down, but it didn't look very inspiring. And this was breakfast time, so I think breakfast is a hard thing to be inspired upon if you're not, unless you're at like a Park Hyatt.
Hard to have aspirational breakfast at the airport lounge, but
yeah, especially getting on a plane, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. But, you know, I mean, and the other thing I would say is the AA, and we were in the AA flagship first part of the lounge, right? And I would say it definitely was one of the least spacious of the lounges that we were at as well. Like, I felt like it's constrained a little bit from the space perspective.
Oh, yeah. As we were getting up, somebody was diving right
swooping
into our table. Yeah, swooping right in. And yeah. So I had thought we might have ended up going back to see what their lunch was, and there was no consideration at all.
Oh yeah, didn't have the time.
No, and part of that we'll get to in a moment. But I mean, we even left an hour earlier than you had originally wanted to do that.
Oh yeah,
and we still didn't have enough time.
That's right.
So the next one was British Airways, and that's a weird one to me. I felt like they had a lot of beverages out there. I didn't really, I don't recall the food being terribly inspiring. And they did, because I was in the first class cabin on the flight, they did give us a voucher to dine. But I think we looked at the menu and breakfast just didn't seem inspiring.
I don't even know if we even looked at the menu. But, you know, I will point out one highlight. I did order from the QR code, which they do have. They will come to your table and provide you, you know, things you can order on your phone through a QR code.
Oh, I love that.
I did order an espresso martini. One of the best espresso martinis I've ever had, actually, was in this lounge.
That was pretty impressive. I was very impressed with that. I also noticed that they had Whispering Angel Rosé, a still rosé, which is not always available, but I would say that that's probably a standard rosé from Provence, and so, you know, I think they acknowledged what the, you know, what the staples needed to be. They also had like five or six sparklings, and none of them were good. I shouldn't say it that way. None of them were to my taste at the moment, especially coming off of a Moët Chandon Imperial.
I will say, space wise, it was pretty well. The capacity was good, you know. So I felt like the there was kind of a dining area, right, where you could do the a la carte dining if you had the privilege, and then you had some other kind of buffet kind of areas, and then you had a seating area, champagne area, you know. So it was a fair amount of space, you know.
Yeah, it was beautifully spread out, and they even had a kids area, like a separate kids play area with a door. So I assume there was some soundproofing. And it's those small things. I mean, this lounge was sparsely leveraged, candidly. when we were there. I think if we saw, what, 10, 12 people, that was probably a lot.
Yeah.
But they really did have a lot of space there. And, I mean, it was almost so much space that it was almost wasteful.
Well, it's nice. It's nice just to have, you know, not be crammed in, you know, like not like the a very, very big difference from the AA lounge we just come from, where
exactly.
Everybody was kind of packed in like sardines. And here, you know, it was feeling very luxurious, the amount of space that you had.
Yeah, absolutely. So the interesting thing we did next, if I recall, we actually hopscotched. So you've got, mm-hmm. if you're going from, I guess, right to left, you've got American, then you've got British Airways, you've got Virgin, which is upstairs.
Right.
Which we didn't have access to. And then you've got Qantas, and then you have Cathay. And we said, well, let's go to Cathay first, and then we'll double back to Qantas.
Right.
And we were told no.
Computer says no.
Yeah. Computer says no. And so we ended up... It was almost funny, because like they sort of forced us to go, you know, just one down the line each way. And
well, I mean, I think they kind of explained it. I mean, they obviously the flight to Hong Kong was being, you know, was boarding, I think, what, within 1 or 2 hours or so of when we were there. And so obviously the lounge was fully booked or fully
subscribed,
occupied, fully subscribed. Yeah. And they wanted to, obviously they were going to allow us in there after what, the noon hour, because that's when they would expect most of the people to have boarded the Hong Kong flight, and the lounge would be much more empty, and then they could accept the other, you know, One World Emerald passengers. So, and you know, they know that people do this, so they do the lounge hopping. So you know, they provided an option for us, so we just said, oh, you know, we changed our plans, we went to the Qantas lounge instead. Right.
Well, and it worked out better for us too, because their Cathay's restaurant didn't open until noon,
right?
And so we would have been there and sort of, you know, meh, but yeah, we did the Qantas lounge, and I was impressed. We had that squid, which is amazing. Very impressive.
The salt and pepper squid, to be specific, which
yep,
is
that salt and pepper
a
squid.
Staple of Qantas lounges around the world, especially the first class ones.
Exactly. And we learned how much of a staple that was. So there's a lounge manager that we happened to chat with, and he was from Sydney. And he seemed to imply, I don't think he said it outright, but he implied that he was the Sydney Qantas first lounge manager. And mm-hmm. he happened to highlight that the salt and pepper squid is a competitive item.
Yeah, he did mention that. I felt that this part of the conversation was just super interesting. And of course, I credit Trevor, because, you know, sometimes I feel like Trevor chats with all kinds of strangers, and it probably a lot more than I feel comfortable with. And I'm like, why are you talking to this person? You know, and in this case, you know, I think it kind of yielded just interesting conversation, because, you know, he did have a relatively extended talk with this guy. And of course, the conversation did gravitate toward the salt and pepper squid. And we do find out that this is apparently a little bit of a competition between the different lounges within the network, right?
Yeah, apparently if you post a picture of a salt and pepper squid from a lounge, you'll get a lot of feedback. It was such a big deal to this gentleman that that he sort of said, hey, why don't you order another one? I'll go talk to the chef. I'll make sure you have.
No, he told us after the fact, right? You know, you know, first of all, we had this conversation. And by the way, I'm probably one of the only few guests probably that had handy on their iPhone salt and pepper squid photos from the Melbourne, Sydney, and LAX Qantas first lounges, because I've ordered them in all three. And I did actually notice that there was, in fact, a significant difference in the Heathrow salt and pepper squid than at some of these other lounges.
Yeah, I mean, we were down to the point of seeing the little, like, what is it, the striations, or you had a better word for it.
Well, so basically the chef had done the knife work to basically slice and put additional, you know, cuts into the squid. And by doing this, this kind of tenderizes it, right? And the interesting thing, the first time we ordered it, you know, you would only notice after you bit it, because the breading kind of hid this extra effort that the chef had done to the squid. But you know, when the second order came out, I think there were some additional instructions that were given by this lounge manager to the chef on duty at the time, that this particular item would be photographed, because in fact it came out with quite a different presentation than the previous version. And it was, in fact, quite showcased the additional knife work that was that went into this particular squid. I felt like I had a special order just to kind of fuel the rivalry between Qantas first class lounges.
Yeah, you definitely got the VIP. you got the VIP attention there.
We did.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty impressive. I really did.
It was a fun part of our visit. You know, I mean, otherwise, I mean, like, it was a nice lounge. It was, you know, I would say the views of the tarmac were a little bit, you know, compromised. Like, they weren't the best views.
Well, it felt like you were in a basement because the window was, like, so far up. And so, like, you're sitting down and you literally feel like you're in a basement.
Yep.
And I don't feel like they had their, I think that lounge is known for their gin and tonic menu. And I didn't feel, am I right in that?
Yeah, I think the gin bar was on the level that we were on. So I think the first level had the gin bar. There's another bar on the second level with, by the way, some slightly improved views of the tarmac, but only just slightly. It definitely didn't, it felt less of a basement because it was the second floor of the lounge. But
yeah, but I mean, other than the food and obviously the conversation, I didn't feel like anything was terribly impressive about that lounge. But the food makes a difference.
The food does make a difference, and it was a combined first and business class lounge. So it was just basically one level of service for the lounge. There wasn't a separate first class area or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then we had the opportunity to finally get to the Cathay Pacific Lounge, which I have to say, yes, the Qantas food was the best, but I think the overall experience of that Cathay Lounge. I mean, the location, the fact that it's upstairs, it's brighter, it feels more open. They did have the sit-down lunch. I didn't love the food. I felt like it could have been better, yeah. But that was, you know, we'd been eating for a while anyway.
Yeah.
But I felt like that was probably the best lounge out of the bunch.
Best vibe, best ambiance, best decor. You definitely felt like, and I think it also kind of shown in the fact that it was also very well subscribed, very well attended that, you know, I think if you were going to pick one, that's probably the one not to be missed, right? Of the lounge.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's the one to prioritize. They even had the pink gin, you know, you talk about the gin bar in the Qantas lounge, and Cathay has the pink gin, which is traditionally I suppose a British thing. But I associate it with more with Madrid. I don't know why, but either way, that's something that is very European, is the pink gin. And so I thought it was interesting that the Cathay Lounge had that, as well as, you know, obviously, you know, the food was good, just not my favorite. And
yeah, they had a pretty good looking menu, but I have to agree, like, the quality of the food, for some reason, the taste was a little off for me. Like, I think I didn't finish something, and I think we even swapped, right? Like, we ended up getting the dishes, and I saw that it was clearly not what you desired.
It was, like, way too spicy, and so we did the swap.
And I was like, Trevor, why don't you hand me that? I think you're going to want to eat this one. but you know, I will say the tarmac views were great as well. It was
absolutely
a level above. I think it's on top of the Qantas Lounge, right? So I think it's like probably the third level above the first two levels of the Qantas Lounge. And so it was definitely where you had the best views of the tarmac. And so we definitely rounded out our visit sitting, you know, doing some plane spotting, you know, from the nice comfy chairs there.
And it was the most convenient to the gate. I mean, you end up walking out of that, and like you're going down a corridor, and boom, you're at the gate. I was surprised because I didn't remember Gatwick like opening up like that. It felt like that the area. Heathrow. Gosh, I got the notes on my on the right side, and I was, for some reason, Gatwick stands out more than Heathrow. Maybe it's just a mental block here, but I was surprised that the gate at Heathrow. That gate area opened up as much as it did. It almost reminded me of the newish old Etihad terminal, where they you know, you get the higher ceilings, because I remember historically Heathrow T3 being just like
very claustrophobic.
Yes, exactly.
And I think most of the rest of the terminal is, because it's a pretty old facility. I think it's just those gates in that one area are open. But yeah, I think that ended our lounge crawl, which, you know, again, we didn't do the specialty dining or the a la carte dining at British Airways. We didn't visit any of the priority pass lounges, but there were at least two or three of those, which, you know, I don't think we really missed very much by not going to those. But, you know, realistically, if you had like, you know, 10 or 12 hours or, you know, you could really utilize all the time just by visiting what is that between the Amex lounge, maybe the two priority pass lounges and the four, you know, One World lounges. I mean, that's what is that, like 7, 8, 9 lounges, something like that, that you could visit in that area.
I'm sorry, but you're not going to convince me that a priority pass lounge is worth spending extra time in an airport.
Well, I mean, I think if you had a lot of time, you know, maybe just, you know, wanted to just visit it for some completionist reason.
I could see the completionist. Yes. For the completionist in us all. Yeah. So we end up getting on the plane. I think the funny part was like you followed me or no, you didn't follow me, right? You didn't want to get on as early as I did because you were flying in economy in premium economy, right? Or did you follow...
Well, you know, I didn't actually know I was in premium economy. I was originally ticketed as an economy passenger, and I was actually okay with that, you know. And unfortunately, it was not my original plan. I think you guys probably, just a refresher from the previous episode, this did not go to plan. You know, I was hoping that I would have a nice business class seat, but that I think Alaska Airlines award availability had some other thoughts. And so I ended up just booking a regular economy ticket, and as it turned out, I got an operational upgrade, right?
Well, I mean, we laid the groundwork for that, right? So we get to the airport, do a little flashback here. We get to the airport and for check-in, we go up to the first class counter. We get me checked in, and then I, you know, hand your passport over and ask if she can check you in. And in the process, you wanted to get your Alaska number put on that, which you did have the One World Emerald status.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the process of that, we also asked whether or not there were any upgrades available. And she looked and she saw, oh, well, you know, it's going to cost. But I felt like there was still a little bit of that bug in her ear. And so
I'm going to go ahead and completely discount what you're saying, because I don't think that had anything to do with it, because I just think they oversold coach.
And they probably did.
But because I was looking at the coach cabin was pretty tight. And, you know, and if just to remind our listeners, you know, we booked this flight, what was it, like 4 or 5 days out? You know, very, very close. And clearly there was some glitch in the award because, I mean, you got a first class seat, but, you know, it went from having like, you know, 3 or 4 different classes of seats available for booking via Alaska Airlines to within about 5 minutes, none being available. So that was interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. But that said, I mean, I do think the fact that she changed your elite status
reflected
the One World.
Yes,
because I think we were either in Qantas or Cathay, and you got the notification that your seat had changed.
Did I don't even remember that part, but I do remember changing the frequent flyer number, and I think that is important because I think in an operational upgrade, they'll probably look for those One World Emeralds first, right, to do something to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've seen British Airways do the same thing. I've probably gotten more operational upgrades on British Airways than any other airline at all.
Hmm.
But the moral of the story is you got to fly in premium economy. I've actually never flown in premium economy. I'm not saying that I would have traded places, but I think that's pretty cool compared to what you were already preparing yourself for.
Although, to be completely honest, I think this particular premium economy was probably one of the worst premium economy experiences I've had on him. And I've actually flown long-haul premium economy on American previously.
Well, it's funny. I think everything on this aircraft was just the worst that we've had. I mean, the British or the flagship first, there's a mattress pad that is new that is wonderful. I will give them huge, huge credit for that mattress pad. But everything else, I mean, the food was subpar.
Yeah, food was not very good.
The service wasn't amazing.
The flight attendants were completely disengaged.
Yeah, it was like they didn't want to go home.
No.
I used to have this joke with my wife. We would go back and forth to Europe in economy, believe it or not. In the 2011 timeframe, I think we got like 2 or 3 really good airfares in economy. And at the time, I was a 1K. She was either a 1K or an expat. Whatever the 50K was, right? Because back then, United status was 25, 50, 100K. or 1K. And it was like they were always excited to go to like Paris or Rome or wherever. But on the way home, they were just never happy. And this is what that American crew felt like. They were just like, oh, I'm going home. I'm just not happy. I'd rather just stay here.
American crews are hit or miss, and I think this was the miss one.
Oh, this was a massive miss. We're just going to go with a massive miss. But we made it. We made it to JFK, and we made it with enough time to be able to go to the Chelsea Lounge. I had wanted to specifically be in first to be able to go to the Chelsea Lounge because they do have that special rotating champagne list, and of course, you know, here we are, we're hopeful for something interesting, and everything's interesting on their rotating. I think they have LPGS, I think they have Krug, I think they have Cristal, and I think they have Dom Perignon. We were 3 days early for Cristal, and we ended up having Krug. I felt like I was flying Cathay.
Yes, you had plenty of champagne in the Champagne Dungeon, otherwise known as Chelsea.
Well, and I was really surprised because then we went to the Soho?
Yeah, the one that's like on the other side of the wall or whatever that actually has windows.
Yeah, and I was just not terribly impressed with it. I mean, it was cool that it had windows, but it just it almost felt like. Like just a big waiting room that had it felt like, I'm trying to think of how to convey this. Like it was like a normal lounge. It had wide, you know, nice high ceilings, which I liked, and the windows were great, but it literally just felt like this kind of stadium type waiting room, or this stadium. Like if there was a horse race outside, it would have felt right in place.
It was really busy, and it was we were there at in the evening after the sun had set, and I think it probably would have looked a little bit nicer probably in the daylight. I know that's when I've sat out there before. So I definitely don't want to, you know, I don't think Trevor's quite doing it justice, but I will say at the same time, we did have really excellent service in the Chelsea Lounge. Mm. We had some excellent food, excellent drink. We actually had afternoon tea, if you recall.
We had afternoon tea. I think we got steaks. I think you got another espresso martini.
I did, which was which they spilled a little bit on me, and not as good as the British Airways galleries. I'm unfortunate. Unfortunately, I have to report, which I think made the waiter a little sad.
You did tell him, yeah.
I was being very blunt.
He went on break after that. He was like,
I know.
He took it hard.
I.
And then, and even dessert, they even had affogato, which is espresso with some vanilla ice cream. I mean, just the whole experience I found was just wonderful. I'll say this: it was wonderful until our server went on break, because then nobody wanted to help us at all.
Nobody wanted to deal with us.
Yeah, nobody wanted to deal with us at all, which was unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, when the waiter was around, he was excellent. He did an amazing job, and we essentially had the equivalent of a multi course meal is what we essentially did.
Yeah, three course.
Three 4 hours or so.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, and it made the experience just that much better.
Oh yeah. So despite it being the Champagne Dungeon, which I once again will just say it's a windowless room with low ceilings, it does have a fireplace and it does have excellent a la carte dining. And the booze that that Trevor's looking for, but I will say it is the ambiance could be a little bit better, because again, it is a windowless room, kind of feels like a basement.
I don't know. I feel like the big chandelier which they put in for ambiance almost takes away from it, because it makes it feel even more low ceiling and stuff.
Yeah,
like they were trying for something, but I feel like they missed a mark.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, the more elevated dining and lounge area is, I just think, you know, just I think just from an openness perspective, so much more claustrophobic than the other lounge, which, again, you obviously are reacting negatively. You felt like, oh, it's kind of like I'm at the racetrack or something. But at least it did have high ceilings. And, you know, if there were, I guess, the same number of people that were in the first class lounge in the business area, it would probably feel pretty luxurious because, I mean, space-wise, it was quite a bit larger.
But you could also make the same comment about London Heathrow, right? In T5, mm-hmm. You've got that galleries first. is very open, but it's very busy. It's just very, very hectic, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Concorde, which really does feel almost claustrophobic. Yes, they have a smaller little patio, open air area, but inside it feels a lot more, you know, very small.
It's less square footage, and it's, I guess it's, there's, it's more, it's less spread out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So but at it least almost, it has the same high ceilings as the Galleries First Lounge.
Did it?
I don't. The Concord Room?
I don't.
In
feel
Heathrow?
Like it,
Terminal 5?
Yeah.
I felt like it was more or less the same ceiling, I think, in Terminal 5. I'm trying to remember if it was the same level or not.
It is the same level. You come out of the escalator, mm-hmm. you go left to the Galleries First and right to the Concord Room.
Yeah. So I would imagine the ceiling height's the same because it's the same level. But.
The Galleries First is primarily out on that patio sort of approach, open to the main.
I think you've got that area, but I think you've got the area that's not the patio as well.
Oh, okay. Maybe I never spend any time in there. Yeah. Well, and they're redoing all that, I think. I think presently.
Probably do for a little bit of a refresh. But that's the part of Heathrow we didn't go to.
That was the part of Heathrow that we didn't go to, and to be honest with you, I was pretty happy.
I would agree. I think Terminal 3, despite it being the less new and older and, you know, lower ceiling, more decrepit part of Heathrow, I think our lounge experience there is a lot more fun. I generally have a lot more fun in Terminal 3 than I do in Heathrow Terminal 5. And, you know, despite the fact that it's not the Concord Room, I think the Galleries First Lounge at Terminal 3, I mean, it's not that much different.
I'm just surprised you called it decrepit. I don't think I would have gone that far.
Well, if you go to the gate area, the fingers, you know, where the gates are, those are pretty decrepit.
Except for where we were. I think we got real lucky with where
yeah,
we
the gates
flew out
where
of.
We were at. Yeah, I think those gates are nice, but I mean,
all the
much
others
the rest,
are.
You know,
yeah. No. I remember them. I'm sure they probably haven't changed since I flew Virgin out of there in 2010. Yeah, that would have been the last time I was at. No. We flew Virgin in. Gosh, we flew Virgin like 2-3 years ago, and I. For the life of me, I think I might have just have instituted a mental block of those gates.
I see. You're having some you've mentally blocked out that portion of time. It's too traumatic for you.
It is. I mean, I've been in some bad airports, but gosh, yeah, no.
But you know, dare I say, this guy's trip was probably the one with the most lounges, and probably among the most amount of time in lounges.
Yeah, lounge to non-lounge proportion is definitely very, very, very heavily favored on lounges.
Yeah, so this was very much a lounge-focused trip, just to sum it all up for our listeners.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I'd do it again. I think I might have skipped Malta. I might have looked at going someplace else. I mean, I was happy to go to Malta, right? But I think for the amount of time that we had, because Malta has so much other to see, right?
We
you've
missed
got
a
architecture,
lot of stuff.
Not architectural. Well, I mean, I suppose you've got architectural beauties and archaeological and
the archaeological
beaches.
Yep. All there's, the beaches and we missed all that stuff.
Yeah, and so I feel like you know to go to a smaller city. I kind of use Estonia, Tallinn, Estonia as the example. If we could have found something more like that, I think we would have felt like we got a lot out of the destination as well as out of the lounge time. But that's, you know, I think I was also happy going someplace warm. And I think that was probably one of the only places that we could have gone someplace warm.
I will say we picked a good place from a weather perspective. I enjoyed the climate a great deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.